This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you.
Good evening. This is Rock Cash, your host this week on The People Speak. The People Speak invites audience participation. You can phone call 716-748-0144. Or if you have a smartphone or a computer, you can go to bbsradio.com and navigate to station 2. Click on the listen icon. You can also participate during the show with calling questions for our guests. Toll free USA and Canada, 1-888-429-5471. Tonight's show is about a tragic event that took place in Fullerton, California, where a young homeless man who was a schizophrenic was beaten into unconsciousness by six Fullerton police officers. Kelly Thomas never regained consciousness. He died 5 days later at St. Jude's Medical Center in Fullerton, California. Ironically, Kelly's father, Ron Thomas, is a retired police officer that served on the force. Ron, welcome to the show. We're sorry for your loss.
Well, thank you. It's been 2.5 years of hell, basically, that no family should have to go through. You know, it's really been something else.
Ron, please explain the excessive use of force that was used on your son, and you being a former police officer, can you give us any rationale as to why they had to go to such extreme violence with your son?
I'm a very logical guy, and I look at everything with wide open eyes. So I wanted to know, okay, what did Kelly do, if anything, to deserve any of this, all of this, perhaps? And not just because I'm his father, but a logical person. I couldn't see anything. And as we all look at the surveillance video of Ramos taunting him and tormenting him and telling him he's going to F him up with these fists and putting the fear into Kelly's schizophrenic mind, you notice after he's standing up that Officer Joe Wolf comes up and gets ready to strike Kelly with baton, and Kelly's hands are in the air. His hands are up. His fingers are up. And, you know, no matter where we're at in this world, that's universal language. That means I surrender, please don't hurt me, I give up. And the attack started anyway. They started beating him with the clubs. They tackled him, kicked him, kneed him, and, you know, beat him to death. Then here comes the tasers, and it just never stopped. So based on that, and the fact that Kelly never struck the officers, he continually said, I'm sorry, sir, please don't do that. He cried out for me. He cried, Dad, 31 times for me to save him. He called out for God to save him. He begged them not to hurt him. I have no rational answer for your question. I can't understand why they did this to him.
Well, it seems more evident that this is becoming more and more frequent as I've looked up not only your son's YouTube video and the surveillance video on that, but 5 months ago, another beating in Long Beach took place where this man was beat beyond recognition, and also another man killed up in Kern County. What is causing police officers to do this? I don't understand it myself.
I don't think it's a cause. I think it's a condition that allows them. It's the Peace Officer Bill of Rights, which protects them. And under this protection, they can literally get away with murder. But we, the people, the public, no one can know anything about their personnel files, what kind of employees they are, any complaints against them. It's actually written into law because of this, and we can't know. So it gives them complete immunity. And their superiors normally come up through the ranks, as in Fullerton. The acting chief and now chief started out as a police cadet with Fullerton. that's his culture that they came up in, that he helped develop, and it's still that way today. So a lot of these guys that go into law enforcement, men and women, a lot of them will go in there just to wear a badge, just to have a gun and the protection. And a lot of times the attitudes change. They feel they can do anything they want to a citizen. They get cold. They get callous because I know they deal with every walk of society. Now, I don't want to take away from the good men and women in law enforcement because there's an awful lot of them out there, the true professionals. But I'm only talking about these particular groups that just don't care about us, the people, at all. And what Kelly was in is referred to as contempt of cop. He got wise mouth with Ramos. After Ramos was wise mouth with him, he's giving it right back to him. They'd had several encounters together. They knew each other. Ramos knew he was mentally ill. So in the beginning of that video, you can hear the audio portion, the bantering back and forth. And it's totally unprofessional, completely. And the superiors, and I always hold them accountable, they condone this kind of action. They allow it to happen. And again, the Peace Officer Bill of Rights protects them. So they do it. They do it, and it's completely wrong.
I agree 1,000%, not just 100%, but 1,000%, because I myself have been pulled over, and there have been cops that are nice guys, and you know, they're courteous and calm and collect, but there are other cops that are just right off the bat, they want to be Mr. Bad Guy and impose their authority on people. What do you have to say to those cops?
Well, what I have to say is, if you want to be a tough guy, go down to the local military recruiter, enlist, go over to Iraq, Afghanistan, and show the Taliban just how tough you are. But don't show the citizens of this United States how tough you are, because we don't want it. We don't want it. You want to be a bad guy, a tough guy, go over and fight a real war against people that are armed and give it back to you. Leave us, the people, alone if you're just going to be that kind of bad police officer and hide under your badge.
Well, that brings us to our next question. What do you think of the recent militarization of the police departments and just the excessive amount of force that they are collaborating, whether it's with these vehicles that break into homes, or these oversized SWAT trucks, or the Humvees, and some military vehicles. What do you think about that? What is your analogy?
Well, you know what? I actually support that there is a time and a place for them. You know, we have some for real bad guys out there. None of us will deny that. Maybe hostage situations, something going on to where you have to break into buildings and break them down. But all too often, they'll break down buildings and start killing people, and it just doesn't need to be. Now, anybody that has followed what's been going on with Kelly's Army, we had a protest out in front of Fullerton a couple weeks ago in front of the police department. None of us are satisfied with the not guilty verdicts of these officers. And they brought out officers in riot gear. They brought this big armored vehicle out in the middle of the street. And what are they going to do with it? I mean, it doesn't have a machine gun mounted on it. It doesn't have a water cannon on it. What are they actually going to do with that? Run us over? You know, and it's meant to intimidate. They don't need it. It's excessive force, once again. It's a show of force, that's for sure. But it's also excessive force. You know, LAPD for a long time has had armored vehicles with battering rams. And you know what? They've used them in situations where they really worked out well. But not against the people, you know. And it's just like I was in Sacramento at the our state capitol here in California, and I was addressing several thousand people, or a couple thousand anyway. And the Sacramento PD was all along the protest march route. They were real nice to us, but they had these horses as big as Clydesdales, and they had metal shoes all over the top, and the horses were in armor, basically. And what do you do with those? They run them into us. You know, they try and step on us and run us over, and that's excessive force again. They don't need to do this at all, you know. So bring out the equipment when you need it. There was a big riot going on in Anaheim at Disneyland, you know, down the street from Disneyland a couple months back. They brought in the whole county, sheriff's deputies, different police departments, all kinds of armored vehicles. Didn't need to be.
Well,
excessive force completely.
I can recall back to the Huntington Beach riots, the surf riots back in the 80s. And we were up on the pier, and the entire force was brought in, and they started getting people off the pier. Police officers were getting pushy and shovey with people that had nothing to do with the riots. They were up on the pier. My brother-in-law was struck with a baton. And, you know, back then we just, you know, moved on. We just got off the pier because we didn't know what to do and what recourse we can take. And at that point, I don't think really there was any recourse because I don't think any of the court systems were going to hear it.
Go ahead.
So what do we do in situations like that? Because I'm not going to let a police officer beat me up. I'm going to defend myself.
I'll do the same thing. And, you know, like I told the people in Fullerton when they brought out everybody, they announced an unlawful assembly. And it doesn't matter whether I think it's an unlawful one or not. They announced an unlawful assembly and said to disperse and go home. And I was talking to some of the officers because they certainly all knew who I am. And I said, look, I'm going to leave, you know. Don't start beating on me with a baton. And they said, you know, Ms. Thomas, we're not going to hit you with a baton. We just need everybody to leave. And I followed their orders. I went, I got in my vehicle, and I went home. And there was a large group that didn't do that, and they spray-painted and tagged the police department and had some other things going on. You know, I listened to them. And I think, yeah, as far as Huntington Beach goes, because they had another problem this year, actually, the end of last year, and it was a huge problem out there. Listen to them. When they're saying it's an unlawful assembly and you shouldn't be there, then no matter whether you think it's right or wrong, here they come. There's some common sense involved with that. If you're in a crosswalk, legally in a crosswalk, and you've entered it legally, and here comes a car barreling down the road, you don't stand your ground and defy him not to hit you. You wait or you run across the road because you might get hit. Same thing with these police officers. You can only take it so far. Listen to what they're telling you, and then deal with it later. You can always go to the city council meetings. You can talk to the chief later on or whatever you need to do. But that's my advice is they're telling you to go home, go home.
Well, you know? That's what we were doing, but the police officer still struck my brother-in-law for no reason whatsoever. And we couldn't tell which department it was because every department was in, you know. Everybody showed up out of nowhere.
Yeah. That's what I would do is, you know, if he gets struck anyway, first of all, there's no DA going to file on the officer for that. And it's excessive force once again. Complete excessive force. There was what was called the May Day riot in Los Angeles. It may have been on Cinco de Mayo. And the LA County Sheriff's deputies were beating everybody, including some very well-known news people who were reporting the story. I mean, these are the people you see every night on your local news hitting them. And they got sued real big over that one. There's a lot of video so they could, you know, find out who was doing what. And, you know, the insurance companies are the one that paid all out, and then the citizens paying all the taxes suffer, not the police officers. Not the police departments or the chiefs. The citizens, once again, pay for it all with higher taxes to pay for more insurances.
Well, I think we need to do something about that as the citizenry to where we change it. And we can't make, you know, allow police officers to be above the law. They have to follow the laws just like we do. And I feel that we need to make the change. How do we go about doing it?
You need to, Well, no. It's very sequential. How I've got some change, especially in Fullerton and around the Southland in California here, is you address it first at the city council meetings. And no matter what you think of the media, you need to get them involved, because if it's not going anywhere, nobody's going to care. Get the media involved as much as you can. Get them there at the city council meetings if you can get them there with their satellite trucks, and I've been very good at that. And ask the mayor and the city council, what's going on with this chief of yours? What's going on with this police department? Have meetings with the mayor and the chief of police. And never deal with number two. Never. I mean, I had meetings with the district attorney himself over my son's case, the mayor, the chief of police, never number two. And find out what they're going to tell you, and a lot of times they're not going to tell you anything, but go back again to the city council meetings and the media and let them know exactly what's going on. Hold them accountable in the public. When you can start embarrassing them, that's when they start paying attention and start doing things. Elsewise, you start dealing with secretaries and number two or three down the line, this stuff, it's not going anywhere. If you follow the normal protocol of, well, file a complaint, do this and that, you're not going to get anywhere. It's going to get buried or lost. Go to number one always and make sure the media is there to hold them accountable, because they can't duck away from the media. You know, they have a microphone and a camera in their face. They have to answer questions at that point, or look, you know, pretty darn stupid for not doing it. And that's how I've been successful, hold them accountable in public.
What do you think of these new laws that are popping up where you cannot videotape police officers in the course of their duty?
Well, that's a Peace Officer Bill of Rights. Again, you know, it's a total legislation thing that, and those senators that will support the Peace Officer Bill of Rights, because it's all about big money and who pays for their votes. It's completely BS, if you will. Our Constitution gives us the right to video. That's part of our freedom of speech. You know, and they're hiding behind, well, that's evidence, so I need to confiscate it. You know, that's all baloney, and I'm working really hard to get all of that changed, and also the Peace Officer Bill of Rights. I want changes in it, and I'm leading that movement. But forget it. Laws to keep us from videotaping police doing their work. There are public servants. They belong to us. They work for us. We have every right to film them, and I'm not going to let it go. You know, we have every right to do so.
Have you heard of the recent killing, well, 9 months ago, of a man in Bakersfield? And supposedly the detective started showing up at the homes of the people that had called in and had their cell phones, and they confiscated everything from those people.
The Silva family, absolutely. I've been different places with them. We're supporters of each other. And you know, it's another huge problem, and they've handled everything wrong there in Bakersfield, including the sheriff, who needs to just resign. And they did exactly that. And they wouldn't let the people. They went into people's homes and would not leave. No search warrant, but they went in there anyway. Stayed there until they could get a judge to get a search warrant in the house and confiscate cell phones.
You know, which is illegal.
It's evidence. It's illegal. They shouldn't even stepped in the house.
Yeah,
well, and then hold them, basically held them hostage, you know, and by making them go into this room or that room, that's also technically kidnapping. But they're holding them hostage there until they can get a judge to sign a warrant. I mean, they're just breaking all the laws to protect themselves.
Do you think that the Patriot Act covers them, and this is why they're doing this, and they're able to get away with a lot more underneath the Patriot Act?
Yeah, I think they're using it, but I think it's stretching the Patriot Act. And of course, they'll stretch everything they can and interpret it any way they can. And it goes back again to big money and the senators who will back them. Everything can be revised. You know, except our Constitution. I don't think we need to revise that so much as maybe at some point make some amendments. But the Patriot Act, the Peace Officer Bill of Rights, all these things can be changed, and we need to change them. You know, it's just out of hand, and there's too many loopholes with all these high-paid attorneys from the Peace Officer Associations and who support the Peace Officer Bill of Rights, who do nothing but make sure that the officers are covered. And it's we the people that suffer for that. Again, I got to just keep reiterating this. I am not talking about good peace officers. You know, these are only the bad ones that need to be protected like this. You know, the good ones know exactly who they are and who I'm talking about, and I support them completely. But these bad guys, they're protected by the Peace Officer Bill of Rights and all these attorneys. We got to change all that.
Yeah, I've been trying to get our local police department myself to adhere to, you know, them following the laws and basically going up against big business, like with noise pollution from a local merchant store here, Walmart, making noise late at night, and it's going way above the barriers of the city codes and everything else. Been dealing with this for like 12 years and still nothing going on. So I had to put them all on check. And they hired a new company to go around and give tickets to the citizenry for anything that's wrong on their property. And they're enforcing the codes on us, but they're not willing to enforce it on big business. And I see that completely wrong, because we are the people that are paying for it, whether it's through the taxes that Walmart collects and pays them through us, or our own, you know, taxes. So it doesn't seem like they want to do their job for the people. It's whoever is greasing their pocket higher.
That's exactly what's going on there. For that, and I don't know that you haven't done this, I would go down to the police department and file a complaint against Walmart. Actually file it, and then you have your paper trail and analysis. What is being done? And keep a photocopy of your filed complaint. And then you can hold them accountable. Here it is. You know, what's the action on this? Go to the district attorney's office and say, you know what, the police department isn't doing anything about this. It's a public nuisance at this point because it's continuous. And, you know, follow it up that way. Because it's nothing but taxes again. All that money that's being brought in, they don't care about the people. They don't care about your complaints. You know, it's all about the money that's being brought in.
Believe it or not, I've been in front of the city council on this issue, and they brought Walmart in. We had a meeting, and Walmart just keeps failing to keep up their end. So I've been, there was a new sergeant that was put in task of the code enforcement. So I've been on his case, and he's telling me that he's fighting for me. So I guess my other thing is to do what you said and go to the district attorney after I filed the complaint.
Well, you know, you can get real technical about it if you wanted to. I mean, we film everything here in Southern California, as they do at a lot of places. Go out there with a decibel meter. Seriously, you can buy them at just about any electronic store, order them online. You get a decibel meter. And record it. I mean, videotape the actual levels of noise by the Walmart, and start posting it online. Take it to the council meeting. Show it at the council meeting. You know, and let them know that the police department still is not doing their job, and you can clearly see that it's in excess of city ordinances and county ordinances. And that's another thing. Go to the county with it. You know, and see what they say. But you'll have your own proof with this decibel reading that the noise is in excess to the city and county ordinances, and then they got to explain why they're accepting that and why they allow it.
Well, so. Yeah, I will do that. Thank you for your advice. I have questions from our audience. Andy in Wyoming wants to know if you have heard of former police officer Michael Rupert, who blew the whistle on the CIA dealing with drugs in California, and what do you think of him?
No, I may have heard about that. You have to understand that you know, my life has been so busy with everything going on. But as far as blowing the whistle on any type of government, I'm for that as long as it doesn't jeopardize national security. So if the CIA is doing something they shouldn't be doing with drugs, these types of things, we need to know about it. So I would support that if that were the case.
I have a question from Allie in New York. She said, the officers who killed your son gave the defense that they were doing their job. Do you think that this is the real issue, or what do you think the officers are taught as a matter of policy and attitude?
Well, that's straight from defense attorney John Barnett and for Ramos. And, they tried to hide and protect the officers behind. That's how they were trained, so it's not their fault. They were just doing their job. Well, that's not their job. Their job is to assess the situation. Ramos already knew that Kelly was mentally ill. They've all had training on how to deal with the mentally ill and the homeless, and he didn't do his job in the way he was trained to do it. So that defense doesn't stand up at all, even though the jury didn't seem to understand it. And here's something that everybody really needs to understand, and I got a harsh lesson in this. The defense is under no obligation to tell the truth. Only the prosecution needs to bring the facts forward. So immediately the defense, in my son's case, defense for the officers, started out with, Kelly was this drug-crazed meth addict. There's no proof or evidence that anywhere in my son's life did he ever do drugs of any type. But they went with it, they stayed with it, because they can go with it. And just lie after lie after lie. So when they come in and say they're just doing their job, they can get away with saying that. And that's wrong.
Are you telling me that if a police officer swears oath to tell the truth, he doesn't have to tell the truth? I mean,
I was reading an article about that very thing today, that officers don't have to tell the truth. In fact, they had interviewed a couple different chiefs of police and former chiefs and say, well, that's the norm. Especially with our Narcotics Bureau, they lie under oath all the time when they're on the stand, because we as people truly believe that police officers are really good people. They tell the truth, and you want to believe them. So when we're part of the jury, they'll lie to you all day long, because the jury is made up of people, of us. And we believe that police officers wouldn't lie. But not all of us realize they really, really do and can.
Well, this is an eye opener. It really is something else. I've got a phone call for you, Ron, all the way from the UK with a question. David from the UK, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I've been listening. Quite interesting conversation here, and I was wondering what you think of the idea of all policemen having to be carry cameras on them, like we see in the reality cop shows where they're going out on a raid and everybody's got camered up. Seems to me if they can do it for those reality shows, they can do it for every policeman, and then we wouldn't have to worry about if she said or they said or who said. We could just watch it on the tape, and plus I don't understand. See, I've been out of the United States for a while, so I don't understand this policeman's charter that says that we can no longer photograph policemen in the act of pursuit of their duty. I thought that was part of our right to do as citizens. But if it's changed, I really need to know about this, because I'm, like I said, I've been out of the country for a while.
Yeah, it is our constitutional right.
The answer is if we can sort out the good guys from the bad guys. In other words, let's give credit to the good guys. There's lots of good guys on the police force. We know that, right?
Yeah, I agree with that completely.
The moment is on the bad guys. If we can somehow turn that around and give lots of credit to the good guys and point out the bad guys, it might just go a long way to solving a whole bunch of the problems that you've been pointing out during this broadcast.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we do. We do give credit continuously to the good men and women of law enforcement, and I'll always do that. To answer some of your questions, there are several departments that do have cameras on their officers, and even Fullerton is trying out a couple different brands right now. Again, the issue is cost. They're very expensive, and but I agree. You know, there's a complete telling of what happens, and as an officer, I would want one because it would protect me from the citizen saying I did something inappropriate. However, as we learned in my son's case, there was a city surveillance video. There was the audio from the digital audio recorders that each officer carried. So you really had a full-length movie of my son's murder. It was all there, every action, every word. There was nothing in suspect. I mean, it was just all there. And the jury still found him not guilty. So, yeah, I would want cameras on the officers if they could all afford it, the departments could afford it. I think it'd be great for everyone. I don't see it as a reality, though.
Well, okay. Go ahead.
They're not. Sorry. I just think about all the bicycle people who ride bicycles now and participate in sports and use those things called GoPro. They're not terribly expensive, and they do exactly what you're talking about. So I can't really see where the price would be an objection. I can understand why some officers, and let me emphasize some officers, would object to having the public watch over the shoulder all the time they're on duty with lethal weapons in their hands. But I suspect a lot of them, as you point out, would say, look, this proves that I was right in the situation, and they would support the idea.
Yeah.
But the problem is the ones that don't want it are probably the very ones that we want the video camera on.
Well, that would be exactly it. I actually have a GoPro myself, so I know what you're talking about. However, these cameras are far more technical. They actually send a signal to the police cars and such, which retransmit them out to the department. Watch commanders can watch everything that's happening with their officers in real time out in the field. So they're far beyond a GoPro to be loaded down later. These are real-time cameras. That's why they're really expensive. There's a lot of other equipment involved, software and things like that. They're actually pretty amazing, but very, very costly.
Thank you for that information. It's a pleasure to talk to somebody who knows what they're talking about for a change. Thank you very much for that.
And thanks for your call, Fred. We're going to take a quick break here on the BBS Radio Network with our awesome sound engineer, Don Newsome. And we'll be back in just a few minutes.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive. But there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who were forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit UNICEFUSA.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
Hello, this is Wesley Snipes. And when I'm divinely inspired and spiritually motivated, I listen to BBSRadio.com.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies,
We're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you.
Welcome back to The People Speak. Rock Cash here with our guest, Ron Thomas, father of Kelly Thomas, who was murdered by Fullerton Police Department officers. Welcome back, Ron. Ron, I have a question from one of our other audience members in Canada. John in Canada wants to know if you've had any trouble getting the message out to the media on the mainstream.
That's a fair question. No, I haven't. I set up a relationship with the media immediately. And, you know, it actually took me a couple weeks to do it. And since I set up that relationship and they learned a little bit about who I am and where I wanted to go, they've been very good to me. And when I call them up, they come out. And I really appreciate that. And the whole key to a successful relationship with the media is never tell them anything that isn't true and call them out only for a legitimate story, or they're not going to cover it. So don't send them down on a wild chase or something that's just really not relevant. So it's been good. It's been very good coverage for me.
Awesome. I've got another caller that wants to ask you a question, Robin, from Washington. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Ron. Hi, Ron. I've been following this case since 2011, and, you know, I paid close attention to the trial and was rather disappointed, like many, many people were, in the outcome. My question is, do you feel that the district attorney did as good a job as he possibly could have done? And also, you know, I'm just really curious as to why he didn't refute the defending attorney's accusations as far as Kelly's drug use. And then also, you know, wasn't Kelly proven to be free of drugs?
Yes, absolutely. There are definite items and things I wanted him to do. Though I was allowed in several meetings with him and his team throughout the 2.5 years, and we discussed a lot, I was always free to email them with my thoughts and concerns and directions I wanted them to look. You know, they're under no obligation to take my advice on everything. They did, in fact, address some key points that I wanted brought up, but not some of the most valid ones that I thought were valid. The defense spent a good amount of time tearing down Kelly's character, but yet we'd already done some interviews, and I say we. I'm working with a documentary crew from Hollywood doing a story on unnecessary force. And we interviewed folks there in Fullerton, prominent business owners, the pastor at the First Christian Church. All of them knew Kelly so well, and they were great interviews, and they just loved Kelly and had a whole different side, a human side, to explain about who Kelly was. And the district attorney wouldn't call him. And now here's another key figure. There's a police officer there in Fullerton. He's been there, I think, 23 years. For the last 12, he's been the homeless liaison officer. Now, he still answers normal calls, but he's the guy that knows all the homeless people out there. And now he's got some more folks working with him. They wouldn't call him up there. And this same man sought me out right after Kelly was killed. And he said that he wanted to introduce himself, and he felt horrible about Kelly's death, and told me if he were on duty that night, Kelly would not have died. And you know, that's profound, my goodness. And the things that he said, he never once had to put handcuffs on Kelly, just tell him what to do and he would do it. So you need to get that kind of guy up on the stand. And these prominent business people and the pastors up on the stand didn't call any of them. But yet the defense went to town tearing Kelly apart.
Exactly. And, you know, you can see very plainly in the video that Kelly wasn't doing anything wrong. And so, you know, that, it, you know, as many people, it's just sickening. But I have another question, too. You know, the people that witnessed his murder, why did the DA not bring some of them forward?
Well, I did ask, of course, and the answer actually makes sense to me. You know, you and I may watch something, and we know what we've seen. We've been able to write it down in a report and recall. But once you get up on that stand and those defense attorneys start tearing you apart and just really, really changing your words around, and how well are you going to hold up under that kind of pressure? The main witness in this case was an excellent witness, the city video and the audio. There was nothing
exactly
better than that, nothing better. So he didn't want to get him up there with the possibility of things getting all turned around. And, you know, I support that because the video was so good, the audio was so good. So that's why I did that.
Yeah, yeah. Do you honestly think that the DA pulled out all stops, or do you think he could have done more?
Definitely could have done more.
I think he could have done more.
Yeah, like the witnesses I was talking about that he didn't call to repute, rebut Kelly's alleged drug use. You know, all of that. He did it the very last day in closing. The very last day in closing, he brought it up.
Yeah.
No,
you know
the
and
defense...
then also, you know, I just didn't get why he didn't bring an expert for schizophrenia, you know, to speak about that.
Well, here's something that you may not realize, but they never proved the point or drove the point that Kelly was schizophrenic.
Yeah.
I mean, that should have been huge. That should have been huge, and it wasn't.
I know. Yeah. So. It just, to me, you know, it just seems to me, and I can say this, that I feel like the trial was kind of thrown, to be honest.
Yeah, a lot of people feel that way.
Oh.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. Are you done, or you have more questions? Be my guest. So.
Oh no, I'm done. Okay. Thank you, Ron.
Great. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Fred in Wisconsin wants to know: at what age did Kelly start showing signs of mental illness, and was there no social services that would provide him housing here in California?
Well, good questions. He was diagnosed at 22. About 22 years old, and you know, in his late teens, you know, 19 or so, maybe 20, 21, we noticed odd behaviors. But was it, you know, like a lazy teenager kind of thing? Kelly always wanted to dress nice, always bathe. He cared about everything, but when he got around that age, he didn't so much anymore. So those were differences, but for us as a family, we didn't know anything about these kind of mental diseases. How did we know that it was signs of schizophrenia? So we had no way of getting him in, or the knowledge that we should get him in, maybe, to talk to somebody, until he was finally diagnosed. Now, as far as housing goes, yes, there's all kinds of housing. Over a 15-year period, I worked with Kelly in and out of board and cares because I still had to work. And so the board and cares, you know, would make sure he took his meds, meals, housing. I would go and visit him all the time. I'd take him out of there and we'd go places. You know, his mother would go visit him and, you know, so that was all good. But the problem is when he was feeling good on his meds, after several months of being at a particular board and care, he would just leave. He'd leave his belongings behind, he'd leave everything behind and just leave. And he wouldn't take the medications with him. And that was a vicious cycle, you know, because it was only a matter of a couple of weeks and the schizophrenia sitting back in really hard. And then the whole process starts over again. So it did that back and forth, that vicious cycle for about 15 years with him. And, you know, he finally ended up in Fullerton, and, you know, the rest of the story there. No, there is some housing. There's not enough housing. There are programs here in California, but it's only if the person will stay and cooperate with the whole thing. And Kelly didn't. He wanted to get on with his life.
Right.
So, but very good questions. Thank you.
And which, if you don't mind me asking, which police department were you serving in? Was it the sheriff's department or was it Fullerton or?
Yeah, Orange County Sheriff's.
Orange County Sheriff's. Great, great. I got another question from Frank in UK. He wants to know if you get support from other officers regarding the quest for justice for your son.
Yeah, you know, in the protest days of 2011, during that summer, many off-duty officers privately identified themselves to me and said how bad they felt, and it's not the way that they would conduct business. And they would carry protest signs up and down in front of Fullerton Police Department. There's been support from law enforcement all over California and even out of California. I know the LAPD, Los Angeles Police Department, which is what, you know, the county north of us, is very supportive. Several communities in Southern California here in Orange County and even San Diego County are very, very supportive. The officers are. And, you know, I still go to functions that police officers attend. And, you know, not all of them like me, and I realize that. Nobody says anything derogatory to me, but it's just so overwhelming the amount of officers that do support and, you know, let me know that they would never do that, and they won't allow their people to do that. And I'm talking about commanders at the LAPD even and chiefs of police around here locally. You know, so it's really, really made a change, and so I get a lot of support, yes.
Great. Have you considered a civil lawsuit? Tom in Seattle wants to know.
Well, not only considered it, but 1 year after Kelly was beaten, so that would have been July 5th, 2012, we did file a lawsuit, a civil lawsuit. Now, in this lawsuit, we didn't ask for any dollar amount, left it up to a jury. If anything is going to be awarded, it is up to the jury. You know, my whole goal here is to get justice, and my whole fight has been the criminal trial. And now we are really hoping that that the Department of Justice, the FBI, is going to file civil rights violations at least. But yeah, a civil trial or civil lawsuit has been filed against the city, the police officers themselves, and I think the former mayor and maybe a couple council members. I'm not sure.
Oh, good. So the feds are getting involved, and they're filing a civil rights injunction against these officers, I hope?
Well, I've been in personal contact, and I've met with him, I believe it's about four times in person, and he's the assistant United States Attorney General out of Los Angeles. And Andrea Barat, and you know, we've talked and talked. He says, "Ron, you ever want to talk about anything? You just give me a call." And last time I seen him, he said, "You know, we're watching everything very, very closely." That was before the trial, just before the trial. Now, after the verdict came down, I called up his office. He said, "Call him anytime." So I called up his office. His secretary said, first of all, she wouldn't let me talk to him. She didn't put in those words, but I couldn't talk to him. And she would not even confirm that they were investigating. However, the FBI spokeswoman, an FBI spokeswoman out of Los Angeles, told the media, and the media put it out, that the FBI is looking into civil rights violations. Now, the reason he wouldn't tell me anything is that's proper protocol. Ongoing investigation, they can't talk about it. And I do appreciate the fact that he's following the protocol, because if they don't, then the attorneys for these guys can come back and say they had that the Department of Justice was pressured into it. They're not getting a fair trial, and all sorts of garbage, and they can walk on those too. So I appreciate the fact that he's not even acknowledging it. But yes, they are investigating. They have been all along. Now they're going over everything that was in the trial, and hopefully they'll come up with civil rights violations.
Great, great. I hope and I wish you the best of luck with all of this. I have one more question for you before we have to wrap it up. Harold in Ohio wants to know, do you think the military and the police would turn their guns in or turn their guns on the U.S. populace in mass if instructed to do so by the government in a future state of emergency?
Boy, you know, that's when you got to ponder over, huh? You can go back to Kent State or any of the others where it was already done. I do understand the question. You know what? I don't think the officers are going to do that. I honestly don't. We just do not live in that kind of society. You know, one-on-one, they'll beat the hell out of you. You know, in groups, they'll beat one person. But to gun down, you know, the general population, I still don't believe that our police officers would do that. I just can't believe that at this point. Certainly not the military. The military is not going to do it. I know the National Guard has a whole different role. And we're not talking about if they're getting fired upon. Of course, they're going to return fire. But just to open fire on citizens, I don't believe that's going to happen. I don't want to believe that would happen. You know what
right.
I mean?
I have a few friends that are police officers, and a lot of them were saying when they're told to do that, they're just going to turn in their badge. And
yes.
That's it.
Yep.
And that's the way it should be. They need to keep the oath to the people. Hang on with us. We'll talk to you as soon as we close out the show for today. And I'd like to thank everybody for joining us here on The People Speak. Next week's guest is another father who lost his son, Charles Strange, father of Michael Strange, part of SEAL Team 6 that lost their lives in Afghanistan, doesn't think that Osama bin Laden was killed. Join us next week on The People Speak.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.